broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, June 11th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunathchee, Shawa, Toksik Nusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us via our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or over on KTOO's Instagram page. Today, summer is in full swing for Salt and Soil Marketplace, a service that helps folks find Southeast delights from growers, fishers, foragers, and more. We'll get all the details. We preview the Dolly Dash coming this Saturday. It's a fun run to help the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. Juno Dance is here with a look at this Saturday's Contra Dance and other dance events around town this summer. And Juno Community Foundation has opened the Arts Vibrancy Endowment Awards. We find out how you can apply. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also join us for a behind-the-scenes, in-the-studio look on our KTOO YouTube or Instagram page today. Salt and Soil Marketplace is an online farmers market connecting local Southeast producers, harvesters, fishers, and foragers with local food consumers on an easy-to-use platform that allows for the best of online shopping and in-person connection through a weekly on-site distribution. And I am joined now by Megan Stangeland from ecotrust.org, the folks who put this all together. Gunathchee, Shah Yigudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio today, Megan. Wasa Iti, how are you?
Thanks for having me. It's been a while since I've had the privilege to come onto the radio and get to talk about the Salt and Soil Marketplace, so thanks for having me.
Of course, yeah, the Salt and Soil Marketplace. This is, I think it's 9 years? Or is this the ninth summer?
Yeah, we are headed into our ninth year. The first couple years, we were open seasonally.
Okay.
But then after year three, we opened on an annual basis. But it's always most exciting to shop the marketplace in the summer because that's when all the exciting produce is on the market.
Okay, so let's go back a little bit. Let's just set up first, what is ecotrust.org? Who is Ecotrust?
Sure. So Ecotrust is a nonprofit organization that's based out of Portland but has been doing work in Southeast Alaska since its inception in 1991. Mm. Our foods program used to be housed at the Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition, and then through the Sustainable Southeast Partnership, Ecotrust and SOC connected, and the foods program was transitioned to Ecotrust because they were interested in doing food systems work throughout the region.
Okay.
So we packed up our projects, moved over to Ecotrust, and were able to continue doing the amazing work that was started at the Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition just under a new fiscal agency.
Okay. So the salt and soil marketplace, I know I gave a little bit of an intro there. Could you break it down a little bit for us more? Like, what is it? How did it get going?
Sure. So the marketplace was started in 2017. That was its first market season. So like you said, we're headed into our ninth season. It is a food hub, but I think it's most easily conceptualized and why we call it an online farmer's market, because that best describes how it functions. It's like a farmer's market that happens on a weekly schedule rather than a daily schedule, and it happens through an online platform.
Okay.
So the way it works is every Friday at noon, the marketplace opens at www.saltandsoilmarketplace.com, and folks can go on and start shopping. You have an entire week to shop the marketplace, which is really important because producers have the entire week to add product or change product availability so that you can see a full breadth and variety of products that are available. And then as of Wednesday at 8 p.m., the marketplace closes. And then any producer who's participated and sold product through the marketplace receives a pick list. And any consumer essentially receives the items that they shop for and confirmed. And then you get to come visit me at distribution on Thursday evenings. And we have all the items that you ordered there at distribution.
Okay, that's kind of cool. So now, what kind of things can you get on the Salt and Soil Marketplace?
Yeah, the Salt and Soil Marketplace serves producers throughout the Southeast region. So we have over 34 producers, give or take, at any given time participating from over 12 different Southeast Alaska communities, which I think is also really important to note. And folks can go on there and shop, like I said, for that entire week, everything from soil-grown vegetables and hydroponic salad greens to smoked seafood, canned seafood, jams, jellies. Because we are a nonprofit project and our mission really is local food sustainability and food systems, we prioritize products that are grown here in the Southeast region of Alaska, and that any of the value-added products have to have a heavily locally grown component to them.
I see. Okay, that's kind of cool. So I'm looking at the saltandsoilmarketplace.com, and I clicked shop now just to see like what kind of stuff. Now, this is the end of, since we're on Wednesday, this is the end of this week's order. So did you say when the deadline was? Did I miss that? Is it Wednesday at 8 p.m.?
Correct. So you can shop Friday from noon until Wednesday at 8 p.m. And yes, we are down to the last couple hours of this week's market season cycle for this week. So the availability will be a little bit less than it would have been on, say, a Friday afternoon. Correct.
Well, this is great for consumers, obviously, but it's also great for all the sort of independent growers. And so how do people, if they are a someone who wants to be on the marketplace, how do they get involved?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question because I have a two-pronged approach in being here today, letting customers know that they can shop the marketplace, but also letting producers in Southeast know that the marketplace is a service that is available to anybody who is producing product here in the Southeast region that has eligible foods to be sold on the marketplace. And that can be anything from eggs to, like I said, soil-grown produce, and pretty much anything in between, including seafood. And if folks are interested in selling on the marketplace, my first suggestion is to reach out so that we can determine if the product that you have available that you're producing is available to be sold on the marketplace. Like I said, we are a farmer's market, so we can't sell anything on the marketplace. We do have regulations that we have to follow to make sure that the foods that we do sell are safe. Some people may have known it previously as cottage foods regulations. It's now known as the homemade foods regulations, and I'm happy to walk folks through that. But there's really quite a wide variety of products that folks are able to sell on the marketplace without any sort of special permitting.
Yeah, just for funsies, I'm seeing rhubarb and prawns and it looks like flowers are available, right?
Yeah, lots of plant starts this time of year, lots of dahlia starts, vegetable starts.
There's some tomatoes, black beauty tomatoes, which look pretty good. And that's great. And then some fresh produce, lettuce and greens. Wow, you've got pretty much everything. And then, so remind me one more time, how does it work for the delivery?
Sure.
So, like if I'm a consumer, what am I expecting on the delivery side? Do I have to pick it up?
Yep, correct.
Okay, so you said come see Megan, right?
You get to come visit me on Thursdays at distribution.
Okay.
Yep, so if you are a consumer and you've placed an order, once you receive your order confirmation on a Wednesday evening, you'll know exactly what it is that you're available to pick up on Thursday. And then Thursday afternoon / evening from 4:30 to 6 p.m., I am at the Cooperative Extension Services, which is in the Federal Flats in the Jared Lee Dental Building. We have office space and we distribute out of their classroom. So folks, stop by anytime during that window and I'll have all the items that you ordered, regardless of whether or not it was salad greens coming from Angoon or eggs from your next door neighbor, all aggregated in one location. All you have to do is stop by and everything will be there ready for you to pick up. And then conversely, if you're a producer participating on the marketplace, anything that sold that you had placed on the market that week, I just have you drop it off with me and then I take care of it from there. I organize it and then I make sure that it gets to the consumer who purchased that product. And I think the other thing that I would really like folks to know is that if you're a producer anywhere in Southeast Alaska, as long as you can get that product to me, and folks have done it a myriad of different ways, we've had folks send product through the U.S. Postal Service if it's shelf-stable, or air cargo, or seaplanes, or I've definitely met my fair share of vehicles at the ferry terminal to offload a bunch of cabbages. I'll do it if that's what it takes. As long as you can get it to Juneau, we can sell it on the marketplace and help you aggregate and distribute it to Juneau-based consumers.
And is this only available in Juneau?
Our only pickup location is currently here in Juneau, yes, but I also have no problem and have done it many times where I've aggregated items here and then sent it on seaplanes to other communities in Southeast. What often ends up happening, or what I suggest folks do, is if there's a couple people in a community who are interested in participating in shopping the marketplace, if you aggregate your order, send it in as one order, then I can ship it. And then as long as somebody's willing to accept it on the other end and redistribute it, we can get product to other communities as well.
I see. But the participants, people who want to be on the market to sell stuff, can be from around Southeast, right?
Any producers in Southeast Alaska are eligible, as long as your product is eligible to sell on the market.
As long as you can sell it on the marketplace.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So I'm imagining that since this is the ninth year, that it's been fairly successful.
Yeah, the marketplace is successful. We've definitely had our ups and downs. I was just doing the math on my way over here. I think we've operated out of 5 different distribution locations in the last 9 years. We definitely saw some ups and downs with COVID, but I think folks really truly understand how important local food is to our community, and they're willing to support it through things like the marketplace.
That's really cool. And, you know, I think many of us in Juneau are jealous of those online delivery services. You know what I'm talking about? I don't remember what they're called anymore, but where you get the food and you can make a meal and you can do that whole thing. We can't do any of that here. You can't even get, you know, fresh stuff delivered because it doesn't work here in Juneau because we're so isolated. But the fact that this is available, that you can order from local and then still be able to pick it up locally and have all that available to you is just really kind of, that's just cool.
Yeah.
I think that's just awesome.
It's exciting. And there's some amazing producers producing some amazing products here in Southeast.
Yeah.
And some even surprising ones. It's always exciting to me see a brand new product on the marketplace that we haven't sold in the 9 years we've operated. There's quite a diversity.
What's the most unique item you've ever seen sold on the marketplace?
Oh, well, I have had somebody sell corn, which just the idea of somebody growing corn here in Southeast Alaska continues to blow my mind. And I've worked in food systems for almost a decade now. So that's always exciting. Mm. And then always the value-added items, too. It's great to have the raw agricultural produce, the cucumbers, the zucchinis, the potatoes and carrots. But there's some people doing some really amazing value-added products with those items, as well as things like kelp and seaweed. That are always exciting to see on the marketplace, that creativity.
That is cool. So you mentioned that you got into this about 10 years ago. How did you get started in this kind of cultivation? Have you always been interested in like local growing and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been excited in food and food experimentation. But honestly, my first touch point was as a customer on the Salt and Soil Marketplace.
Oh.
So I've come full circle from shopping the marketplace to now running the marketplace.
And did you just want to then go work at EcoTrust? Is that how it worked? And you just said, hey, can I work there?
Yeah. So my actual title is a Southeast Alaska Food Systems Manager. So I manage a huge collection of Southeast Food Systems projects. I just get to work as a coordination and distribution manager for the Salt and Soil Marketplace as one of my many projects.
Mm.
And I've always been fascinated in food systems work. I think food systems unites us all. Everybody has eating in common at some
juncture. Eat.
Exactly. And so food systems has always been exciting to me from that perspective.
That's cool. I'm talking to Megan Stenglin from ecotrust.org, who puts together the Salt and Soil Marketplace, which is going on its 9th year. And I love the fact that it started as sort of a seasonal thing, but let's just talk real quick about what kind of things can I expect to get over the winter months?
Sure. So as I said earlier, the summer is our most exciting time because it does have all those soil-grown products, which really brings a lot of folks to the marketplace. But the reason we're able to keep our doors open year-round is because of those value-added products that I was mentioning earlier. There's a huge creativity base in the value-added products, but also hydroponics.
Mm.
There's a lot of folks doing hydroponic operations, and that product is available year-round. And then there's also some of the root storage and crops that can be stored long-term, like your potatoes and your carrots. So we can have some of those items, garlic, for example, on the marketplace until almost December.
That's cool. Now, one last question for you as a consumer. Is there like a minimum that I have to place for an order, or do I have to become a member? How does that work?
Yeah, great question. So everybody who shops the marketplace does have to create an online account because that is how all the transactions happen. That's also how your credit card is charged. There's no money exchanged at the time of pickup. It all happens through the online platform. You do have to become a member so that we have that information. You have one free order, and then after that, we do prompt for a $25 annual membership fee, but this fee is completely optional. We would never want somebody's inability to pay the $25 annual fee to prevent them from accessing local food. So that would be prompted on your second order. And then after that, you can order as much or as little product you would like for the rest of the season.
Oh, wow.
And then the same thing for producers, too. Some producers feel like they need to be locked in to be able to offer a certain amount or volume of produce, and that's absolutely not true for the marketplace. You can participate 1 week in the entire year, or you can participate every week for an entire year. With as much or little product on the marketplace as you choose as the producer to put online.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
What an awesome thing to be able to shop local, actually shop Southeast, really.
And, regionally,
and
yeah.
Regionally, and be able to get all of those wonderful items. Megan, thanks so much for coming in. You can find out more at saltandsoilmarketplace.com. And you can figure out how to become a producer and or a consumer on that website. Is there any other information where they need to, can they follow you on socials or anything to see fresh ingredients like on Instagram or something?
Sure. The best way definitely to see what's fresh on the marketplace is going to be able to go to the marketplace and then look at the products available that week.
Mm-hmm.
If folks do have questions, especially individuals looking to sell product on the marketplace, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. You can reach me at saltandsoil@ecotrust.org and send any questions. And then also I just wanted to end today saying that any dollar spent on local food stays circulating within our community and helps to support local producers, which are your neighbors and your friends and your family, and is incredibly important in strengthening our regional food systems.
Awesome. Megan Stengelin, thank you so much for coming in today. Salt and Soil Marketplace.
Thanks for having me.
Cheesh. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com.
Sounds wild.
Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On a cold winter morning, I'm walking through a snowy forest and see a couple of red squirrels watching me from the low branch of a spruce tree. I rarely see two red squirrels together unless one is chasing the other one out of its territory or scolding it as it approaches. But it's cold, and sometimes sibling squirrels with adjacent territories will lower their territorial defenses and share a nest on a cold night. Mother squirrels sometimes bequeath their territory to a pup and move one or two territories over when there's a vacancy. But generally, red squirrels are loners and fiercely territorial. A territory is about 1/2 acre to 1 acre in size. Red squirrels spend their entire lives in that small patch of forest, surrounding their food cache and their midden, a pile of spruce cones with tunnels and chambers throughout. The piles of shredded spruce cones make it easy to spot a squirrel's territory. These hyperactive animals are quick to explore an adjacent territory, usually trespassing to steal their neighbor's stored food. If they discover that the owner is absent, maybe eaten by a goshawk or a marten. But generally, any intruder is quickly chased away. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on today's live streams on YouTube and Instagram. Just look for the KTOO pages of those services. Calling all Dolly Parton enthusiasts to showcase their best wigs, pearls, shirts, or even a full-blown costume. It's the Dolly Dash. It's a fun run and more to promote the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. It's this Saturday, June 14th. And in the studio now, I've got Izzy Ensinger, Community Engagement Coordinator at AEYC, as well as Destiny Siegel, the Program Associate at AEYC, here to share more with Thank you so much for coming in today. It's a pleasure to see you both. Wasiti, how are you?
We are doing great. Thank you so much for having us.
Ramping up for the Dolly Dash. So before we get to the actual race, somebody tell me about the Dolly Parton Imagination Library and how that got started.
Yeah, so it started back in 2006. AUAC found interest in just providing educational resources to the communities and Juno. So what it is, it's a program that delivers free, high-quality, age-appropriate books to enrolled children from 0 to 5 throughout Southeast Alaska. Since launching that program in 2006, we have provided a total of 307,000 books to children. Yeah, to about 9,000 children across Southeast Alaska. And that is helping us enhance early literacy as well as kindergarten readiness throughout the communities.
And so what kind of books am I getting through the Dolly Parton Imagination? I just like saying that. The Dolly Parton Imagination Library.
It's a great name.
Yeah, so every year there are some new additions. It changes. Mm-hmm. But it's also a lot of classics like Corduroy. We've seen,
The Rabbit Listens is my favorite one, actually.
That's a really good one. And then also just a lot of new books that are coming out. They're high quality. They're all printed with Penguin Random House, and Dolly Parton's Foundation works with them to get the books. So they come at a low cost, so it's about $2.50 for the book as well as mailing them to all the children. But, you know, timing that by about 1,200 children who we currently have enrolled in the program, the total sums up. So
yeah, I bet.
That's why we are providing more fundraisers. We have a raffle going on and then the Dolly Dash to help cover a lot of that.
Okay, one last question, then we'll talk about the events, is if I'm a parent and I want to get my student involved in this, do I just search Dolly Parton Imagination Library Juno in my favorite search engine, or how do I find it?
Yeah, so you can either go to our website, aeyc-sea.org, and it's on there, so you can sign up through there. But you can also go and Google Dolly Parton Imagination Library. If you enter the zip code that you're located in, so even if it's not Juneau and it's Craig or Yakutat, you enter your zip code, and it'll tell you if the program's available there, which it will be because it's through us. And then you can just sign your child up that way. It takes about 2 to 3 months before the child starts receiving books in the mail. But it's a total of 60 books if you sign them up at an early, you know, as soon as they're born.
Yeah.
So they kind of just build their library, you know, before starting kindergarten.
And is this a, like, no charge kind of situation?
Yeah. Completely free to families. Yeah. So, you know, you also get to see the joy of your child going to the mailbox every month and opening up and having something for them.
Like, Mom, Dad, yeah,
right, with their name on it. So it's super exciting. But yeah, kids just love the program. And we've just had so much amazing feedback. I mean, majority of families in Juneau receive this program.
That is amazing. That's really cool. So because of that, there is a lot that you have to do event-wise to make up for that. And, of course, you can find out all the information that we're talking about at aeyc-sea.org, which is the organization locally here. What does that stand for again, Izzy, AEYC?
The Association for the Education of Young Children.
There you go.
Southeast
Alaska. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's a really long name.
Soon to be a new name.
Yeah.
Soon to be a new name. Southeast Childhood Collective.
Oh, Southeast.
So keep an eye out, and then I'll be all on our website. Yeah. But yeah, soon we'll be changing over.
Yay! I love
easier
it.
Name.
Something easier.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so the Dolly Dash is an event that has so much involved in it. Tell us about it. I know it's this Saturday, but there's not just a run, but there's other stuff. But let's just get going. Tell me everything.
Yeah. So again, the Dolly Dash Family Fun Run 1K, 5K this Saturday. The kickoff is at 10 a.m. Registration starts at 9, so people can be there as early as 9. But you can also pre-register. So again, it's just a family fun run. You can dress up as Dolly Parton, so your best pearls, wigs, bedazzled cowboy hat, maybe extra tufts. I don't know. I don't know what
you
run in.
Like to see Dolly Parton in extra tufts.
I would too. I think, but yeah, everybody can run, walk, whatever they want to do to have fun with it. We're going to have door prizes, tables with resource information, snacks, music, and we have fun signs that will be along the race that to support you while you're doing it. And we'll be selling raffle tickets, which have some fantastic prizes. So, yeah.
And where does the – did I miss it? Where the race takes place?
At the airport trail.
Okay, the airport trail. So yeah. You just show up there to register. You can register in advance if you want.
Yeah, so it's actually cheaper to register in advance. Just, like, it's already a pretty cheap event. So it's $15 to pre-register for adults, $20 if you register on race day, $5 for kids pre-registered, or $6 on race day. And it is – on race entry, which you can find the link to that from our website, or we've made a Facebook event, which also has the link. And yeah.
Okay, cool. That is so awesome. Mm-hmm. And tell me about some of the activities that will be happening on Saturday in addition to the run.
So the resource information will be at a couple different tables. And we have, so the AUIC does the Partnership for Families and Children. So some agencies that are part of that will be present, which will be Be Smart, and then Safe CAC, and a couple different search tables. So search pediatric rehabilitation and the search women's health program will both be there. And we'll have a couple volunteers present from the Juneau Public Library as well. So they'll have some activities at those tables. We're working on having face paint that we will just have, like a glittery face paint, but we're working on making that. So, so we'll have that. The door prizes are fantastic. Just check the board on your way out to see if you're a winner. Yeah,
we're going to have a ton of extra, like, dolly gear to give out to folks, too. So,
if you
lots
don't have your own
up.
Dolly wig, you can maybe get one or
yes,
something. Or yeah,
exactly.
That's kind of cool. And in your deep down in your hearts right now, are you hoping that it's like today?
Oh,
in terms of weather,
because we lucked out last year, so yeah. I'm really hoping we we see a beautiful Saturday. Yeah,
we've just been planning for rain, but like slowly over this week, we've been like, are we safe? Like,
somebody told me today, like today's sunny, tomorrow's gonna rain, but then maybe it's gonna get sunny again. I don't know. It's just welcome to Juneau, living in a rainforest,
good.
Always an adventure.
Yeah,
that's really cool. So, is there other information that we need to know about the Dolly Dash, or I know you mentioned a raffle too, right?
Yeah, we would love to tell you about the raffle.
Yeah.
So the raffle is an amazing new addition. We got a gaming permit this year. So that's only $10 for a raffle ticket. And there's 8 prizes. So the Alaska Airline tickets, and then several different tours were donated for us to do as the prizes, from North Star Helicopter, Wings Airway, Allen Marine, Alaska Club donated a family membership, Auk Bay Yoga donated a membership, Frenchie's Floral, and Hearthside both donated gift. So,
that's awesome. Those Alaska Airlines always coming through with those raffle tickets. Adventure prizes, yeah. Anyone can participate in this, right? You don't necessarily have to have a kid to necessarily support the Dolly Dash or the Dolly Parton Imagination Library or the Dolly Dash itself, which is kind of cool. So everyone's welcome. Yeah,
absolutely. Yep, anyone. And like we said, you don't have to run it. You can two-step across the finish line as long as you're having fun. That's all that matters.
Right. So because the race is more the excuse to be there to support the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. What a cool event. I hope it continues. I know it happened last year. What year are we in the Dolly Dash?
Second year.
This is the second year.
Yeah.
I think I said last year, I hope it continues, and I'm glad it is. That's so cool.
It's bigger and better
this
year.
Bigger and better, and you can find out more at AEYC-SEA.org. It's this Saturday, June 14th. Registration begins at 9. The race is at 10. Bring the kids, bring the family, bring the friends, all kinds of good stuff going on. It's out at the Airport Dyke Trail, and it's the Dolly Dash. I love it. Izzy, Destiny, thank you so much for coming in and sharing with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. We will now have a savory moment.
Step into the savory moment.
Shh.
She's been called the ultimate food scholar. She writes for the Wall Street Journal, The Guardian, and the London Review of Books. She is admittedly fond of wooden spoons. When someone like this tells you they know the secret to cooking, you pull up a chair and listen. Imagine B. Wilson, author of The Secret to Cooking, has asked you round for tea at her home in Cambridge, England. Rose petals and licorice root steep in a pot, and a pound of carrots waits on the cutting board. B delivers her first confidence. Cooking is not about gadgets, hacks, or hidden ingredients. You nod, reach for the sugar, and a splash of milk. Confidence 2. Unsalted butter is delicious on toast. You disagree vehemently, but keep it to yourself. After the last lemony crumbs of Madeira cake are gone, B puts on an apron and begins to peel and chop the carrots. The only other thing on the counter is a thumb-sized hunk of butter and a salt shaker. As B works, blonde curls bobbing, she delivers confidence number 3. She utilizes a cooking technology that's more than 10,000 years old. It's called a cooking pot. B places the carrots into a small saucepan with a quarter cup of water, the butter, and a big pinch of salt. Soon the carrots are singing over high heat. As they tenderize, B shares confidence 4. Butter-infused salt water makes an ideal poaching liquid. No wine or broth necessary. 5 minutes later, you see root vegetables glistening in a silky sauce. Because they've been cooked so quickly, the orbs of carrot cast a bright orange glow. B hands you a copy of her book as you head out the door. She leans close before whispering, "The real secret to cooking is the human at the stove." And then she's gone, almost as if this afternoon never happened. Find B. Wilson's recipe for butter poached carrots at savorymoment.org from the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska. I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K, dedicated to Kalen Hobbs Peterson right here at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Contra dance is a lively social folk dance performed in long lines of couples facing each other. At least that's what the internet told me. And Juno apparently loves their contra dances. And Daniel Martin from Juno Dance joins me now for a look at this week's contra dance, as well as some other dance happenings in Juno. Gonna cheese, ha yigidi. Thank you so much for coming in today, Daniel. Wasiyati, how are ya?
I'm doing well. Ganesh cheese to you, Boston, for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So I had no idea what contra dance is. So let's start there. I know I gave a description from the interwebs, but can you break it down a little bit more for me?
Yeah, well, it's a folk dance. It has its roots in like European sort of folk dancing, English country, I think. But it's really an American dance. It's really an American phenomenon. I think it started in New England, you know, different sort of cultures colliding, different sorts of musics, Irish traditional music, some Appalachian old time. But New England sort of came up with kind of its own style of music, and then this own style of dancing that kind of goes along with it. So if you know, most people have had some exposure to like square dancing.
Right.
People have done it in school. It's that kind of a thing. I am really a fan of contra dancing, and I'm not as big of a fan of square dancing. So it's that kind of a thing. There's a caller. People stand in a certain kind of a formation. You've got a partner. You've got other people that you interact with. And the people that you interact with change throughout the dance and throughout the tune. Every time the tune starts over, the dance starts over from the beginning. And then typically you'll progress to where you and your partner are dancing with one set of people, and then the tune finishes, starts again, the dance finishes, starts again, and you have a new group that you're dancing with. So that sort of thing. And there's some different formations, but that's the basic idea.
Is the music, you said it's sort of, it's inspired by folk? Is it basically folk music?
For sure. Yes, it's a folk music, but I guess I... And the music that we dance to in Juneau and actually in other contra communities, it can actually be pretty wide-ranging. There's bands that have like sort of a swingy vibe to them.
Okay.
You know, but typically they're acoustic bands, although some people sort of break that template as well. But in Juneau, we typically have sort of old-time or sort of Irish traditional, because they all tend to have the same kind of structure to the tunes. It's musicians listening will know this is like an A-A-B-B structure.
Uh-huh.
There's an A part and a B part, and the A part repeats, and the B part repeats, and then the tune starts over. And so the dances are structured so that they fit that tune structure. And it's as far as being, you know, the musician side of it is a whole nother level of complexity. As a dancer, there's basically some sort of relatively simple movement, sometimes strung together in a little bit more challenging of a way. We always teach the dance before you start the dance.
Mm-hmm.
So you come in, we expect people to come in knowing nothing.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Exactly.
Beginner's welcome,
yes,
right?
Super beginner's welcome.
Yeah.
Do come at 7:30 this Saturday. That's when I'll be teaching kind of the warm-up sort of lesson.
Okay.
And we'll be learning some of the basics and doing some simple dances. And then by 8 o'clock and later in the night, we'll be doing a little bit more intermediate dances. But again, every dance is taught and you walk through the dance before the music begins. And then the music begins and then we go for it.
That's cool.
It's a blast.
So this contra dance is happening this Saturday. It's at St. Anne's Hall at 5th and Gold Street. From, as Daniel said, 7:30 to 10:30. You want to get there right away to be able to learn the dances.
You can come early to change your shoes if you really want to be ready at 7:30.
Yeah, nice. And what does it cost me anything to get in here?
Yeah, you know, we're accommodating. It's a sliding scale. We only ask $5 for, like, students and sort of a service corps like JV, Vista, those kinds of folks, and also kids. Or minors, under 12, I think we typically let under 12 in free.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ask 10 to 20 sliding scale for sort of general adult admission.
I see, okay.
But, you know, we don't turn anyone away.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And is there, you mentioned a partner. Do I have to bring somebody?
That is a very good question and a common question that I get. You absolutely do not need to bring a partner. It is customary. And I dare say kind of expected. It's part of the culture to ask a new person to dance every dance, every dance, yeah. You might dance, sometimes they'll do a waltz like in between sets, and it's okay, you know, so you might dance a waltz with somebody that you also danced a contra with, but typically I will dance a contra, a different contra with a different person. I mean, each new dance.
I see. And it is called a social dance.
Exactly.
You're getting to meet people, right? You're getting out, you're sort of being social with folks and you're learning the steps with a bunch of people. That's kind of cool. How many people are usually involved in, I guess, how big can it get? How big can the line get?
Well, it can get, I mean, you know, depends on how big the hall is.
I guess as big as St. Anne's Hall.
But as big as St. Anne's Hall, we've had, the contra dancing in Juneau sort of had a bit of a lull after COVID, like so many other things.
Mm.
But as of sort of last fall, coincidentally, when I got involved, you know, helping out organize and promote, total coincidence, we really started putting the word out there. And we've been getting, you know, up to 80 people, you know, in some of these winter dances. And we had a great turnout just in May. And I want to emphasize for a minute or just that having these dances going on in the summer is kind of a special thing and sort of a testing the waters kind of a deal. I believe for decades they never hosted dances in the summer except for the pre-fireworks dance on the 3rd of July. That's been a longstanding tradition. But so, you know, we're trying to really reach out to everyone in Juneau, but also, you know, to newer folks in town, people who might just be here for the summer, and have them, you know, join us. They really turned out in May, you know, and it was a sunny, beautiful day and people turned out. It's probably going to be a sunny, beautiful day this Saturday, but hey, we're going to have a great turnout. And it's going to be a ton of fun.
So are you trying to do these every month, the contra dance?
Every month for now, my ambition is to get back to twice a month, which used to be the case way before my time in Juneau. So
okay.
I'm really trying to revive this whole thing. I mean, the revival is there, but we need more bands is more than anything else, actually. We got the dancers. We've got demand for dances. We need musicians. Come check out the contra dance. Maybe get involved. Maybe we can get some more contra bands in Juneau. That would be
I
really
love
great.
That. And you can get all information. Juneau Dance has a Facebook page. There's also a Juneau Contra Dance Facebook page as well that Daniel has started. And so you can follow all of that there. I did want to mention one more thing, which you touched on just briefly, was the pre-fireworks dance, that tradition there, Thursday, July 3rd. Normally you have like a First Friday social dance, but there's no First Friday in July. It's actually there is, but it's moved to Thursday. So there's no First Friday dance, but you're doing the pre-fireworks dance. Tell us quickly about that.
The pre-fireworks dance, well, it's going to be a contra dance. It's a special sort of anniversary occasion for two of our sort of longtime contra dance organizers and callers in Juneau, Doug and Odette Edgar. You may know them, so that it's they got married on this day some years ago, and so it's sort of a celebration for them. But it's going to be a great way to stay up late and be plenty energized when it's time for the fireworks on July 3rd.
And it's the same time, same place, St. Anne's Hall, 7:30 on July 3rd, for the pre-fireworks dance. But get yourself out to the contra dance this Saturday. The 14th from 7:30 to 10:30 over at St. Anne's Hall. And I guess you go to Juneau Dance to follow, and you don't have to register. Can you just show up?
Can just show up. You can go to Juneau Dance on Facebook, join that group. We post about all the different dance stuff that people are doing in town. There's dance lessons, there's salsa, there's a bunch of different stuff going on even in the summer. And then the other way is you can get on my email newsletter, which is called the Dancer's Digest, and you can actually email dancersdigest@pm.me. So that's one word, dancersdigest@pm.me.
Awesome. Daniel Martin from Juneau Dance with the Contra Dance this Saturday and the pre-fireworks dance on July 3rd. Thank you so much for coming into Juneau Afternoon. I really appreciate you being here. Ganesh Cheesh. This is Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. Up next, we'll talk with the Juneau Community Foundation about the new Arts Vibrancy Endowment Fund. This is Juneau Afternoon.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Keishi Bessie Cooley. And the word this week is sok.
Sok.
That means hooligan. And here is a sentence.
Sok ichi angayati adakam dilgani.
People light hooligan grease. Let's hear it again.
Sok.
Hooligan. Gunas cheesh to Hune Lance Twitchell, Goldbelt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Keishi Bessie Cooley is Kokhetan and a child of a Yenyedi man. She is from Daisleen, Teslin, and grew up spending time in Teslin and around Teslin Lake. She earned a master's degree in Indigenous Languages and Linguistics from Simon Fraser University and interviewed many speakers for the Hashagun language series. She is currently translating projects for the Children of the Taku Society.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansengress.com/careers.
From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Mike Lane. Today is Wednesday, June 11th, and on this day back in 1967, Mrs. Eleanor Dusenberry, composer of the music for Alaska's official song, Alaska's Flag, was selected as one of 100 people to become an honorary member of the Alaska Century Club. The club was a fraternal organization of members who had contributed to Alaska's development and welfare. That's a look back at this day in 1967.
That's Mike Lane with the On the Day segment. You can join Mike Lane every morning on KTOO for Morning Edition. Tune in early. This is Juneau Afternoon, community supported on KTOO at 104.3 Juneau, 91.7 Juneau Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us today for a behind the scenes in the studio peek on YouTube and Instagram. The 2025 Arts Vibrancy Endowment Artist Awards, formerly known as the Individual Artist Awards, are now open. That and a bunch of other cool things like the Hope CBJ grants are on the docket for today's chat with Amy Skilbred, Executive Director over at the Juno Community Foundation, who's now in the studio to tell us all we need to know. Goodness geez for being here today. Wasiti, how are you, Amy?
I'm great. Couldn't be better. So beautiful outside today.
It's why
we all live in Juno.
We need that. I mean, I have to take the vitamin D, right? But you also get the vitamin D on these nice sunny days.
Exactly.
So hopefully people are listening and they're on their Walkmans or whatever they have these days. Walkman. I just really aged
just
myself.
Just dated yourself badly there.
Really badly. Everybody's got the iPhone now. So anyway, let's talk about first, I want to just talk about quickly about these the Arts Vibrancy Endowment Award, because this changed from the title Individual Artists Award was what it used to be known by. Why the change in name, and does that mean anything for the awards itself?
It does. So for the first 4 years of these awards that they've been given out, it was for individual artists, meaning one person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over the years of receiving those applications, it's become clearer that having collaborations or groups of people, not particularly that they have to be a nonprofit at all. In fact, not a nonprofit is just as good or better.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to support groups of artists in what they want to do. I think particularly that occurs in music and other things in Juno, where people get together and make music and
where they want to do it. Like, it's more like, it's sort of like almost a project award in that way. If you have a group that's coming up with an idea that you want to make something, right? Which is
exactly.
Kind of cool. I like that.
And it can be a visual artist, arts, music, dance, theater, pretty broad range, literature, or multidisciplinary work.
Okay, great. And those opened on June 1st.
That opened on June 1st.
Yeah.
And August 15th is the application deadline.
Deadline's August 15th. So you have a few weeks to get your application in. Well, actually, like 2.5 months almost.
You got a chunk of time in the summer.
And there's a different number of awards. There's $2,500 for, there's going to be four of those.
Right.
And then if you need a little bit more cash, there's three awards for $5,000.
Correct.
Are also available. Of course, everything we're talking about today, you can go over at junocf.org and see all of the different things under the tabs. There's so many things and funds that you can support as well as apply for,
right.
Like this Arts Vibrancy Endowment Artists Award. I love that.
Yeah, and just knowing that we're going to be giving out $25,000.
Yeah.
It's our 25th. Anniversary this year for
nice.
The Community Foundation. And over the past 4 years, over around $110,000 has gone out to artists in Juno. And so it's an example of building an endowment so that you can provide funds annually to assist areas and people in our community. And this has been the Arts Vibrancy Endowment is just that. It's a growing endowment in order to be able to continue to support artists, art groups, arts in Juno.
I love that. And I love the fact that, I guess a group could apply, like a nonprofit could apply, but I do love the fact that these are more focused on people who maybe not be going that traditional route, right?
Yeah, I think it has to be an individual.
Oh, it has to be an individual
or a group. It can be an individual in a group.
Okay.
For the group.
Okay.
Or an individual themselves.
Okay. So it really isn't for a nonprofit. Okay.
No.
That's what I love about it, because I always feel like sometimes, you know, you as a person may not want to work with an organization on a particular project, or maybe they've rejected that project, but your dream is still to make it happen, you know?
Yeah.
And so this is a way to get a little seed money to do your project, which is kind of cool.
It is. And we have a lot of, I think in Juno, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council gives out grants to nonprofits, and they give out scholarships. And so there's a whole other place that helps fund arts in Juno. And so this is a complementary to what they do.
Right. Because, I mean, in my opinion, what does the Juno Community Foundation not fund is the question. Because you guys do a lot.
We do a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. And part of that is the next thing, which is the Hope CBJ grant. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, this is the 10th year of our giving out the Juno Hope Endowment and CBJ Social Service Grants. And this year, all-time high, we're giving out a little over $3 million in grants, grant funding. There's going to be about $1.1 million come from the Juno Community Foundation's Hope Endowment. which again, reason for endowments is that they can push out money every year. And this is a large endowment, and it provides $1.1 million or so every year.
That's awesome.
And then $2.9 million is coming from the City and Borough of Juneau. And that's to support social service, direct service organizations here in Juneau.
So you kind of manage that for CBJ. Is that how that kind of works?
We do. You know, the first year that we did this, the Juneau Community Foundation did it in 2015, and we have a professional advisory board that we'd gotten together, and we had a couple people, at least one from the assembly who was on there. And by the time we were done, he said, well, why don't we just put these together and run one program? And I think the benefit of that is that the organizations only have to apply once to one. And an ability to have a broader sense and a individual organization sense of what's needed in Juneau. And we have a fairly lengthy process in that we have a series of listen and learns, which we bring the leaders of different nonprofits working in the social service areas together and have them identify what's the gap, what needs to be funded. And it's really, I think, done a good job in collaboration and coordination among organizations, because we meet and there are these discussions about, all right, it's not particularly my agency or what I'm doing, but it's the clients that we serve and how can we best serve them. And so things that have come out of that include, you know, Housing First and the Juneau Nonprofit Housing Development Council, which is helping with making the Gasnon Human Services buildings that they're doing.
Nice.
So there's a lot going on there. It's anywhere from 15 to about 20 organizations a year that get funding. And it's great that we've been able to receive more funds from the city in order to help all these organizations and make that happen.
So these have been announced? Have the awardees been notified? And
we
all
have.
That?
We have announced all the we've put out a press release, and we have set out announcements to all the organizations so everybody knows what funding that they're going to be getting.
That's awesome.
So,
What kind of, can you give me sort of who got, just give me some highlights. Maybe we don't name everybody.
Alaska Legal Services. They do a lot of work with folks in town who need assistance because they're renters and, you know, something's happened, they need some assistance. They do assistance with SNAP benefits. They also provide civil legal services to folks in town. And so non-criminal is what that means. And then AWARE, you know, is the shelter for domestic violence victims in Juneau. And that we provide them with funds. Big Brothers, Big Sisters, supporting them. Family Promise of Juneau, Catholic Community Services, particular their senior services with Catholic Community Services.
Yes, yeah.
So a lot there.
They're on the show tomorrow.
Meals on Wheels.
Yeah, Meals on Wheels, fantastic program.
Yeah. Jammy Health and Wellness. And so the Juneau School District with assistance for kids who are mental health issues with kids in the school district, being able to assist with that. Kin Support Program, which is providing funds to a program that was started about a year ago here in Juneau that supports families who are fostering family and or friends, meaning they're not part of the state foster care system, but they've taken on taking care of their children or others in their community.
Yeah, the Kin Support Program, I think they were on the show last fall, and it was they'd been around for maybe less than a year. But it was really a cool program.
And it's taken off, and there's, unfortunately, a lot of kids who need services, and we're happy to be able to support them and provide assistance. St. Vincent de Paul, the Glory Hall, Housing First. So really we span the gamut of mental health, suicide prevention, domestic violence prevention, or victims of domestic violence, homelessness, food insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of different areas, but all in that direct service, social service organizations.
That's fantastic. So, well, congratulations to all those services that got awarded. It's wonderful to see Juno being supported in that way, and those definitely important programs that we need here, those social service programs. It's really awesome.
And it's in a lot of ways, we have the easy job. It's the people who are on the front lines who are assisting everyone that really deserve a big credit.
Yeah, absolutely.
We couldn't do what we do without those folks as our partners.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's cool.
That's great.
Awesome for the Hope CBJ Awards. Was there one other? What was the other thing we were going to talk about? Was there one other thing you had?
Yeah. So quickly.
Yeah.
The Juneau Nordic Ski Club has just finished hardening the Eagle Crest Lower Nordic Trail. When you drive up to Eagle Crest before you get to the mountain and the chairlift area and even the parking lot on your left-hand side, there's a little meadow and a trail system through there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been able to raise funds. We provided them with $15,000 to sort of get it started, and with a lot of volunteer effort and businesses in town that assisted, they've now redone the surface so that it'll be better in the winter for cross-country skiing. You don't need to have as much snow in order to cover the ground and maintain it. But it also makes for a great trail for walking on and, you know, being able to just go for a short hike on, things like that. So
that's
year-round
cool.
use is good.
So it's been flattened out a little bit, is what you said.
Flattened out, and I think they put in some D-rock, you know,
the
rock, so that it's more of a trail,
less
of a path.
That's good. More of a trail, less of a path. I like that. That's a good way to say that. That's awesome. Okay, cool. Well, and of course, Juneau Community Foundation has so many programs that you can support. You can find out more about beyond the ones that we talked about here today. There's funds that you can support. There's funds you can apply for, whether you're an individual, like we talked about the Arts Vibrancy Endowment Fund grants, or organizations like the Kin Support Program, which was new and found a way to apply for these grants and get some support. So I'm just saying, like, in terms of if people have creative ideas or if they have something that they want to make happen in the social service space or in the arts space or in many other spaces, like, it's possible, right?
And it is. Juneau, it definitely is.
Yeah, and Juneau Community Foundation makes so many things happen for folks here. And disclaimer, they also handle the KTO Legacy Fund, which is awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, part of what I do is I will get calls from people who say, I have this idea, you know, how might I fund it? And we can talk that through and figure out if it's something that can work. Sometimes it's something that works through us, and other times I'm like, well, you should go to these folks and they can help you make that happen.
And figure that out.
Yeah, and just be able to take an idea and put it into action. So,
happy, beautiful day, Amy. Enjoy the sunny day out there. I really appreciate you coming in and sharing an update from the Juneau Community Foundation. You can find out more at junocf.org. Gwyneth Cheesh.
Thank you. Yeah.
Absolutely. That'll do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. Juneau Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juneau 104.3 and KAUK Juneau Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JuneauAfternoon. You can also find live stream archives on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juneau Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Alaska Club, Alaska Airlines, Club 49, Hanson Gresh, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunnath Cheesh!